Hello and welcome to Gentlemen Discussing Mother 3. I'm Catsman, and today I'm joined by Fishheads.
Hello.
Happy Man.
Tom Lagasa.
Mixmaster Mal.
Tom Lagasa.
And that's all. And we're going to be discussing...
Fishheads clearly is not a DCMC fan, since it is not used to greeting.
Oh, shit.
So yeah, we'll be discussing chapters 4 through 6 of the game. So if you haven't played those chapters, everything in this podcast is going to be spoilers. Go back, play chapters 1 to 3, and then come listen to this. So that's about everything. We're continuing exactly where we left off.
Yep, so...
There has been a 3-year time split.
Chapter 4 is called Club to Tebow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time skips, I was just going to say, time skips in fiction don't always work out that well. So, like, as a writer, you've got to be really careful. So I'm glad that this ended up being kind of a cool time skip.
Yeah. Unexpected, too.
Yeah. And it's really a slap in the face, because at the end of chapter 3, you're feeling pretty good about having, you know, you beat the pork tank, you, like, beat up Facade. You're feeling like you've sort of, you know, it's been a minor victory against the pig Mascavi. And then you go to chapter 4. Lucas is incredibly depressed still. Flint is still spending every day looking for fucking Klaus in the mountains. He's been doing that every day for 3 years.
Tazmali has been completely taken over by the pig masks at this point. It's heavily industrial. Well, not heavily. It's pretty industrialized.
Is that a motorcycle in the background?
No, that's my dad mowing. Sorry.
Close the window.
That's kind of going to be a problem, because it's pretty loud.
It's way too hot to close the window, but okay. I'll do that.
Sorry, I'm going to make you suffer
for it.
That's
way too loud to not do it.
I feel bad now. But anyway, yeah. Tazmali has not been industrialized, but it's been commercialized, I think. It's probably a better word.
There's a railway, money... An army base next to the town. What else?
All right, is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's better.
All right.
If you start dying of heatstroke, I'll let you open it again.
Okay.
Oh yeah, and every single person, aside from some people, own a happy box now.
Yeah.
And everyone who doesn't own a happy box is struck by lightning constantly.
Yeah, their houses are mysteriously being struck by lightning.
Including Lucas's and Flint's house. Their sheep corral got destroyed by lightning.
Yeah, and a bunch of their sheep are singed black.
Yeah.
And the Jamaican dude, his hut is gone.
Leiter's hut keeps getting struck by lightning, and he just rebuilds it, and he gets struck by lightning again.
There's mouse hiding in the attic, though.
All of the old people have been put into a dilapidated home.
The old people's home is so, like, it's brilliant, but it's also really depressing, because that's what we do with old people, and it just made me feel bad.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, Earthbound had a lot of jokes about, oh, this is how Americans do things, look at them, and this has got to be that. Oh yeah, not only is there a shitty old folks home, they turned Wes's house into the shitty old folks home.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Fucking poor Wes, man. And it's a very Simpsons-y moment. Like, it's like some of the lines in that place are out The Simpsons.
The frog there is even old.
Yeah. I may be old, but I can still save your game.
Yeah, a lot of things have changed in Tazmali. The complete extent of the change, like, a previously pastoral existence is completely gone aside from Lucas's house.
Most of the people in town are working for the pig masks at these factories or whatever. And
Was I the only one who got a kind of Own It vibe from it?
Yeah, it's been turned into Own It.
Yeah.
In the first game.
So you get Boney at this point in your party. I don't think you could have him in your party before now.
No, he was with Flint sometimes.
But Flint, yeah.
Boney is the... But every Earthbound, every Mother game has like a kind of useless party member, and Boney is the useless one.
I don't know. But
Earthbound, but Jeff had the multi-bottle rockets, which were the best items in the game.
Jeff was cool. Boney's just like... He has one ability, which is Sniff, and half the time it doesn't even work.
The only enemy I found that it doesn't work on is the garbage thing or whatever.
Yeah. We'll get to that.
Anyway, but he can sniff your enemies, which tells you their weaknesses and some other stuff about them sometimes.
Yeah. I literally just use him to hold healing and recovery items and the shield snatcher.
Yeah,
as well.
I dump the DCMC pamphlet and the shield snatcher on him.
Lucas or Flint, they still refuse to get a happy box.
Yeah. Yep. There's a few people who are just really stubborn about it, like how Wes is basically the only person who's making a big fuss at this point, and at the very start he sort of marches into the town square and like yells at Facade. and they just like two pigmas come up to him and like, what is it? Like they put a net over him and just drag him back to the old folks home. Like, get back there, you crazy old demented old person.
The pig farm has been turned into a training ground for the pig mask farm.
Yeah.
Well, you can always hear the shitty like pig mask march theme if you want to.
Yeah. I'll get to this a bit more later, but I really like the depiction of the pig masks, like the invading army, because they're always portrayed as sort of lazy and incompetent, and some of them are assholes, but some of them just seem like normal dudes, you know?
Yeah.
I like that.
There's one in the hotel is like, why do you have to keep talking to everyone? And like, there's a pause. It's like, no, I think that's a good thing. You should talk to everyone.
Some of them literally are normal dudes, because a lot of the pig masks like are villagers who signed up.
Yeah.
Something to meet later. The story starts out proper, you see some of the workers from the factory coming home, and they talk about how the bass player in this nightclub next to the factory looks a lot like Duster, who has still been gone for 3 years since he got washed away in the river. So Lucas goes to tell Wes, and Wes tells him, well, if my son is still out there, you gotta go to that club and find him and see if it's him.
Yeah, because Duster had the egg.
I think you're wrong. He doesn't refer to him as his son, but as moron.
Well, okay, that's
that
the
moron,
wrong.
Yeah. That's that moron could still be alive.
Money comes into play at this point. This is the first point where you get currency.
I totally forgot that money was called Dragon Power. It seemed like a weird name, at least at first. You get used to it.
So the frogs act as a sort of bank, or more as ATMs for your money.
Yes.
Again, I'd like to point out that because money goes directly into your bank account, not onto you, there is again, first of all, there's no point taking money with you anywhere, because 99% of the time, if there's a shop, there's also a save frog who can manage your currency. And number two, there is literally no penalty for dying at all in this game. Goddamn.
The only times where it's inconvenient is, we'll get to that, never mind. It's in Chapter 5, but sometimes it's an inconvenience, but usually it's, the one thing is if you use a bunch of items during a boss battle, you don't get them back.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
But in terms of, like in Earthbound, especially, if you died, it was a major setback, because when you respawned, most of your party would still be ghosts, and you'd have to go to like a hospital or a healing place or whatever. And in the early game, hospitals cost quite a lot of money. It was a major setback. But in this game, they're just like, everyone has full health now. Go.
Once you have, you use fewer items anyway. Once you have more party members who can use healing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was on the assumption that you lose DP when you die, like half.
I don't think you do. You might lose the DP that's on your person, but seeing as there's no point carrying it around anyways, that's so harsh. Also, I'd like to point out a few things about the start of this chapter as a whole. First of all, I love that obviously they made Lucas' sprite taller because he's older, but Kumatora's sprite is like 1 or 2 pixels taller. It's like barely noticeable, because I guess in the prologue she was like a teenager, but it's definitely there.
Might not notice it, but your brain will.
Yeah, and
like
then
that.
Also, if you look around in the house, you'll find that Flint still has Klaus's shoes and the scrap of Hinoa's dress.
Oh shit, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, it's really sad. Poor Flint. He's got them in like a cupboard.
He's still searching.
The pig mask outside your house is... all of this lightning and you still refuse to buy a happy box? You must really hate unhappiness.
Yeah.
He's just outside your house trying to bugger you into buying one.
In case we didn't fully clarify what a happy box is, it's basically a TV, but...
We talked about that last episode.
It's not a TV at all. Like, it's ambiguous as to what it is, but there's... I looked around Tasmania and all the surrounding areas loads when I started, because I didn't when I initially played the game. I just ran straight to the story. There's a girl somewhere in a hotel.
Yes.
And like, her granddad is waiting outside, and he's like, I'm going for a walk with my granddaughter or whatever. Oh, I can't wait. And she's inside staring at the happy box, and she's like, oh, I want to go for a walk with my granddad, but I can't stop staring at this happy box.
It's the same with, you know, the drunk guy from the earlier ones, Matt?
Yeah.
You have the huge afro.
Oh, yeah.
He is now just inside, just staring at the happy box all day.
Right, yeah.
Like, so he has a pretty addictive personality, I think, because he was drunk, so...
But it is implied that they are sort of addictive. Like, you can't stop watching them, even if there's nothing
hypnotic.
Particularly... Yeah, hypnotic. Yeah. Well, no, I think some... Like, it was heavily implied that the girl was dependent on them, I think.
And, there's actually... Well, I think we're going to talk about Tasmania for a little while, because there's a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah.
Like... In the jail, there are now policemen, actually.
Oh, yeah, there's actual the cops. Policemen. I forgot about that.
Policemen also, in other games are always so fucking funny. The
clear
guy
out,
you...
get out of my way, clear out, get out of my way, out, clear, get out of my
no,
way,
the,
my
the guy
way.
In the cell, the guy in the police station in Tasmania says, he says, like, get out of here, or you might make me want to arrest you.
I love, there's one who has to hold the door to the cell shut. Because of when breaking out of it.
Oh, yeah.
He's repaired a lot. Characters from Earthbound are now in Tasmania Village.
There like are?
NPCs.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the punk from the bike shop, he's in jail.
Yeah.
Mr. T shows up and tells you to not go on the train tracks.
Eventually he lets you through, though.
I love the whole exchange with Mr. T. Like, he saves you from the train like 6 times.
And
every time he has something different to say.
The hooker from Freed is on the beach. I think there's a bunch of other people too.
Crap, I forgot about that.
And the guy who's in the jail now, guess what he's inside the jail for? Picking up the doorknob.
Yeah, he picked up the doorknob.
And
he was arrested for grand larceny, so apparently that doorknob was pretty important.
Yeah.
I didn't notice the fucking doorknob. Jesus Christ. I keep missing the doorknob in this game.
I think at one of the beaches, you get to the first one of these like novelty presents, I guess you could call them, where you open up a present box, like a chest, and you don't get an item, but a reggae rhythm plays.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and look at
the music box.
And then it continues.
Yeah. I can just like go for an hour as long you want.
The train isn't coming through again, so to get to the factory, have we talked enough about Tasmalee?
Yeah. I just want to mention one more thing, which is that a big point of criticism for Mother 3 is that it doesn't feel like you're going on like a grand adventure, like all around the world, like Earthbound does. And instead, it focuses on a small number of locations and how they change over time. And I like this approach a lot. Like,
yeah,
I like the fact that you keep revisiting Tasmalee and seeing how things are going, because there's always new stuff going on.
There aren't a lot of RPGs that do that.
Yeah, and it's a very deliberate feeling, you know, to have the world feel smaller. I don't think it was for any like time or budget reasons or anything.
No,
and Itoi said in an interview, like, he started out with Mother 3 wanting to make a really sort of grand, like, epic adventure RPG, but he very deliberately toned it down. And I don't see why there's criticism of it. I liked it.
One more thing.
Oh, well, I also had one last thing, but you say your last thing first.
Two last things. The message board. There's
so much stuff on the message board. Reminds me of Psychonauts. That's the same thing. You can read the message boards and there's just a ton of messages on it.
I didn't write all of them down, but the one that stuck out most to me is a message to like the old people of Tasmania asking them to die quicker because they need more friends. And of course, this message is from the ghosts in the castle.
Yeah.
You can go back to the castle, by the way, at this point in the game, and all the ghosts are there, and they're like, we got bored of partying. Life sucks now. I wish I was dead. Legit what they say. And the ghost with the fucking blue box is still there, and he still tells you there's a map in it.
Even though it's you've long since taken the map away.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily, because... That was like...
You could have left it, actually,
Duster.
Yeah.
No, Duster took it, not Lucas. Lucas don't know about maps.
My last thing was you can go to the grave and see Flint, and this is the last time you see him for a long time in this game.
Yeah.
And Flint tells you to, oh, you're here to say goodbye to mom, or like, you know, you're here to talk to mom or whatever, and you can look at the grave, and I believe you get a little scene of her.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah,
so...
it's definitely implied that Flint's like not there at all for Lucas, and he's just a really shit father now, basically. Kind of sucks. Also, I'm sorry, but I have another last thing that I have to mention. And that is, you remember in the first part, there's the guy with the cookies called Mike, who is always offering people his dirty cookies. Well, he's back, and he's the guy in the old folks' home.
Which is weird, because he doesn't look that old.
Yeah, but he's the guy in the old folks' home who says that he likes the nice-bodied girls that work there. And one of them enters the room and goes, I'm sorry, Mike, but that's called sexual harassment these days. And Mike just sits there and goes, this is a hard world we live in now. it's really Simpsons-y. It's hilarious. He is now my favorite minor NPC in that game. Legit.
Also, this isn't really Tasmania because it's outside of it, but you can go back to the forest. I don't think you need to. I did because I had no idea where I was going at this point. And this was on me being grinded up unwittingly. But like, there used to be the enemy called Spud Bugs, like in the forest cliff area. And if you come back, you find a grown-up version like called Big Spud Bugs. And if you look at the battle memory, it's like, these Spud Bugs have grown up in like the past 3 years. But
I like that continuity a bit. Like it's the same with the yam monsters.
Yeah,
forest.
I had not fought a great yam monster before because they just stand there, and I was like, I'll ignore them. But they're really fucking difficult.
They are. I didn't think I killed one. And it says about Big Spud Bugs. It asks, but what does it mean to be an adult? I really like the battle memory thing. I really like reading about enemies in video games. It's my thing. I like it.
Right. So, at this point, you need to get to the factory. And there's not another train coming for a while, so you've got to walk along the tracks. And it's a pretty long walk.
Fuck mushrooms.
I have problems with mushrooms.
Not the mushrooms, the mushrooms. I don't have a problem with the mushrooms.
I see. You fight like mushrooms and mushroom dogs and other stuff.
This part of the game introduces the squawking stick, which is one of my absolute favorite enemies. Because it's just a bird's head on a stick.
Yeah, it doesn't really do anything.
And it stays there, it can't move. Oh, it's brilliant.
So you meet one of the mid-gypsies.
Who's in a hot spring.
Yeah, you find a hot spring halfway along. At this point, you've been battling like stuff for a while, and it's kind of like, you know, running out of HP, and you're like, oh, hot spring.
This is also magic butterfly area. I'm not sure what butterflies actually do.
They make your whole party feel relaxed.
Nerfbound, they restore your magic.
Yeah, I think they do that here too. Just not a lot of it, just a little bit, though.
And the best part is you find a frog, of course, the same game, but it's a magic butterfly frog with wings. It's great. There are a lot of variations of the frogs.
Yeah. There's a list of them somewhere, but there's like 20 different kinds of frogs you can get. Although the old folks frog is the best.
Yeah.
So I like the frog in the car too.
The Magypsy teaches you how to use your PSI.
Psychics, yeah.
Yes, he teaches you how to use your PSI.
Whatever you named your favorite thing after at the start of the game, that's comes your psi technique.
Yeah.
So, of course, mine is like PK Mitsuru Alpha. I think that's what it was.
Wait. What did you say your name is?
I think I said this in the first episode. Did I say this in the first episode? Yeah, I named my favorite thing Mitsuru.
I don't know what Mitsuru is.
It's fucking waifu. But that's not all. I want to know what he named Kumisora. I really do.
Let's not talk about this.
I do.
Fuck your cats, man.
So
wasn't it a girl you liked, Mel?
Are we not going to talk about the specifics of how Lucas learns PSI?
We could.
Ionia holds your head underwater and says some things that could be taken as a double entendre. I don't like this. It makes the Magypsies look like sexual predators for absolutely no reason, because it's just a throwaway joke.
I liked it. I thought it was a good scene.
The Magypsies are fucking weird. you get your Psy, whatever the fuck you name your favorite thing, and it's a powerful, like, physical attack, I believe.
It costs 10. No, it's a powerful PSI attack.
Well, yeah.
It hits all enemies. It's non-elemental specific.
But,
so
useful. Yeah, it's like the thing about PSI Love is that it, because it uses so much PP, it's not worth using if there's just one enemy on the screen, unless you're absolutely desperate, to be honest.
If it's a boss.
Yeah, not even if it's a boss, it's definitely not worth using, and it's more worth saving the PSI for shields and for healing. So I kind of think, why have this really like powerful attack if it costs so much, and it's 99% of the time it's much better to heal or put up a shield? Seems silly.
I guess. At this point you get to the factory, and they won't let you through to the nightclub unless you get a part-time job there. So yes. You have to do the most depressing, boring work ever.
I didn't actually put Turbo on at this point because I wanted to feel the menialness of it.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I also didn't put Fast, but I'm glad actually because I have a new appreciation for the factory segment of this game.
Yeah.
Or the Clayman factory situation of this game. Because again, I think... it might be another criticism of like American... culture, like there's something very American about the idea that if you work really hard every day, then you can rise through the ranks and like realize your life's ambitions, and like impoverished people can become incredibly rich people and all that. And you know, it's that kind of idea, I guess. And there's a lot of people in Tasmaila who work at the factory who go like, oh, one day I'll be rich and powerful.
But they're not.
That's what Facet told him, probably.
Yes, that's exactly what Facet told him.
As his name would suggest, speaks a lot of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
We did miss one thing in the tunnel, which is a train tunnel.
Yeah, Mr. T spends ages like lecturing you, like a train's come down this road. You're gonna get killed if you go down there. You know, what are you doing, you idiot?
Of course.
And you have to go in anyway.
You should stay on the sides of the track. Although I think if you walk on for long enough, and this is what I did. A train comes, but the game goes in like slow motion and gives you time to get off, or like Lucas does a very dramatic
dramatic
to the side.
But if you if you just don't walk on the train tracks like an idiot, then it doesn't come at all. So
Mr.
T was right. You should be careful on the train tracks. Like
it's the best way to keep away from enemies, though, because I think they're off to the sides and not on the tracks.
Yeah, but it's very silly to play on the train tracks. Let's be honest here.
The menial task we're discussing that you have to do in the factory is because, like, does it just make Clayman? I think that's what it does.
Yeah, it just makes Clayman.
You have to get some faulty Clayman and push them up so they can be
recharged.
Yeah, recharged. And it's very, very boring.
You've got to go down into the mines. The mines are somewhat big and push them. Like, actually get behind them and
literally
just...
push them. You can't dash either.
Yep.
So, it's, of course, intentional, I would suspect.
Yeah, it's only, like, 2 minutes long as well. Yeah. Like, being someone who, like, I went to school and then I did college and then I went straight to university and I have not, aside from, like, web design stuff, which doesn't really count, I haven't done, like, a menial part-time job. So I have no idea whether this is a good approximation or not. But I have a friend who works at, like, a really shite restaurant called Hungry Horse, and he says it's the most depressing thing in the world. And I'm inclined to believe him, not just because of this game, but generally I'm inclined to believe him.
So...
I was a janitor for an extremely short while, and everyone there seemed pretty depressed, so...
You mean...
Rob Dyer's a janitor. You should talk to him about
that. Wasn't
that
just recently?
Stuff.
Yes, yep. And then Happy Moments fired for being sick.
Yep, I got...
being off the job sick for having a cold.
Yeah, I got... Well, I don't know if we're going to keep this in, but I don't think I told Catherine or Fishheads about this. I got sick the day before I started my job. And I thought that if I called in sick on my first day of the job, then I would get fired immediately. So I went to job work anyway, and like a couple days later, they fired me anyway because I got sick.
Wow.
That's a pretty shitty job.
No job security. Yeah. Fuck.
No, I didn't have any job security because I was still like, I was going to do like one, yeah, I was going to do 1 week to learn how to do the job, and then I would like sign a contract and get on and everything. But they just fired me before I could sign that, so
that's
no repercussions on their parts.
So yeah, you finish the menial tasks. You get really triumphant music for finishing it, though. This is pretty funny.
I think, and are they randomly placed?
Boney goes and does dog work instead. He just runs on a treadmill.
Yeah, he has to run on a treadmill.
The other dogs complain about him, don't they? I think so.
Yeah, and there's a pig who's running on the treadmill also.
In general, I love the way that the pig masks decide to generate energy, because they always do it in the most stupid roundabout way possible.
Yeah, so in this case, they're having the dogs run on the treadmill to produce electricity for recharging the claymen.
I love how when claymen run out of energy, they start to melt. Like, you can see just a big pile of melting claymen.
Bit depressing. Poor claymen.
So are the claymen randomly placed? Because at one point I got really lucky, and the second one I went to get was right next to the elevator.
I don't know if they are.
I got one that was really near the elevator. But
I don't think they're randomly placed, because they're the same each time. But yeah, I don't want to spend too long sort of just regaling everything that happens in the story, because if you're listening to this, then you've already played Mother 3. So
we hope.
So yeah, after that, you get the tickets, you go up to Club Titipu, and there's a scene in which the bouncers of the club think
Great
you're too
scene.
Suspicious.
I love it.
The whole scene is absolutely impeccable. And the line, you smell underage, you smell like an underage kid and a dog, is just printed into my mind permanently.
It's great. The two guards are a neckbeard and skinhead named Neckbeard and Skinhead for their names.
And
Mother 3, like, right until the end, it just continually introduces really funny characters, and they are really funny.
So the way Lucas gets into the club is he dresses Boney up as a human being. Like, with a baseball hat on.
And Boney stands on
two legs, and they both try to get in. And the guards are suspicious because they're like, hey, dog, you smell like a dog. And hey, you smell like a kid. You can't get in here.
And the scene goes on for ages. And, at the end, they get in because one of the waitresses comes out and goes, oh, it's such and such. You two, the duo that are always being
it's
mistaken.
It's Kumatora, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But she goes, yeah, the duo who are always being mistaken for an underage kid and a dog. You haven't been mistaken for an underage kid and a dog again. And there's a whole bit where Skinhead tries to get Boney to shake, and he's like, if by chance you are a dog, you'd be one of the best dogs to ever shake. He's like really emotional about it.
Really good shake.
Great. So you get into the club.
You'll never have Boney shake your hand.
You'll get into the club, which is actually a pretty funny, lighthearted area, I guess. But it's meant to provide entertainment, of course. And all the waitresses in the club have to giggle after they're finished their sentences. Every single one, I think, except Violet Kumatora. So you play it, one of them complains about it and then giggles at the end of the line.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
What is Club Titibu? Like, what is it? Does it have tits and booze? I'm confused by the name. This is a serious question. What does the name mean?
It's music and stuff and drink.
Yeah, but why is it called Club Titibu? What's that a translation of?
I don't know.
Tomato never explained it. It seems like such a weird thing.
What is Titibu?
Is it called that in Japanese too?
I don't know, maybe. It might just be a verbatim translation, actually, to be honest.
Does Titibu mean anything?
I think it meant something. From his notes, I remember that the Sunshine Forest was originally the Terry Forest or the Telly Forest, and Telly means like light or sunshine or whatever, so he changed that. And then Tasmiley, he got that translation from Super Smash Bros. Brawl, because there's a line in Brawl about it. And then the weird thing is that Flint has a really Japanesey name in the Japanese version, but Flint's name is a reference, for some reason, Flint and Hinawa are named after guns. Flint is named after a flintlock, and then Hinawa is named after a matchlock.
Flint doesn't have a Japanese name in Japanese. His name is Frinto.
But his wife is definitely named after, a matchlock gun, but her name is left really Japanese, and I don't know why.
Hinawa and Kumatora are the only like Japanese names in this.
Yeah, basically, and they stick out like a sore thumb, in my opinion.
Especially Hinawa.
Yeah.
The Japanese-made matchlock guns are actually pretty good. I think that might be why. And that's why she has a Japanese name. I don't know.
Yeah, there's one in Metal Gear Solid 4 that's really powerful.
Yeah. Also, on that theme, Lucas and Klaus, their names do mean something, but I believe it's something quite obscure. Do we say it's
I told you.
We talked about that.
Anyway,
the waitress is Kumatora. She got a job here and changed her name to Violet. And if you named her Violet in the game, then she changed her name to Kumatora.
Really?
It's really cool. Yes.
Wow.
That's brilliant.
Didn't know that. That's amazing. Truly, like, Shigesato Itoi is the one man who thinks of everything.
Yeah. Basically, the club, they spell like soda, fries. But our main attraction is the band DCMC.
Which I guess is like AC/DC. I have no idea what.
Yeah,
I assume it's a reference to that.
It's meant to mean.
It might be an acronym for something, but I don't know. Never explained.
The band DCMC are like the bass player in it is Duster, the guy you've been looking for.
But he has a big afro.
He has a huge afro that's really cool, and I wish he was wearing for the rest of the game.
Yeah, and he's really sick on the bass, and he has no memory of who he is. He just knows he's part of DCMC.
So a lot of the you meet a character who will be another character who will be showing up, who's the big pig mask guy.
The pork.
He's awesome. He's sitting at a couch surrounded by chicks, and you can't see his face, but he has huge muscles, and he tells you not to bother him.
And huge horns. Yeah. He's a huge, huge DCMC fan.
Yes, a huge, horny DCMC fan.
And in this area, you can get the DCMC pamphlet, which I believe could replace, like, Lucas's stick as a weapon.
Yeah, they give you one for free, just to make sure that you've got one.
Mm. Yeah, so, anyway, you go... Kumatora leads you to some... After the band plays...
And it's awesome. And they all have their own little animations as well for playing all the instruments, which is, if you played Earthbound, you'll know that what happens in a musical number in Earthbound is that the characters get up and then the sprites sort of move around. Whereas in Mother 3, they actually play music. And the animation actually plays in time to the music, which is, again...
I'm quite fond of the concert... With the lady, like, blues singer in Earthbound, where there's a creeper who comes up on the stage and tries to get her, and guards like, run him off.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
The music you play is a rendition of Master P's theme, I believe.
No, it's not. It's a rendition of Duster's theme.
I didn't know Duster had a theme.
They played... Yeah, it's... That's what they play now. In like way later, they play Poké's theme.
Shit, that's Duster's theme. You're right. How did I miss
also,
that?
Also, when
you're playing as him and walking around town. Yeah, God damn it!
You'll have heard the song because it's the one that plays in the beginning and end of each episode.
Huh. Interesting. Well,
you guys haven't, but I put it in there.
So yeah, there's a dungeon which is called the Attic, and the music track that plays in the attic is called The Attic's a Dungeon? With a question mark. And a track. Although it is also a pretty hard dungeon. Because I think this is the first part of the game that's kind of difficult.
It's not spiders. It's arachnid!
It, right.
The harder they are, the more exclamation marks it has
on
the end.
Four exclamation marks. He's that incredible. I love Battle Memory so much. Battle Memory is so good.
Yeah, and there's also the Elder Batties, so you get to hear the reprise of the Batman theme remix.
Anyway,
overall,
the dungeon is
dungeon.
It's pretty confusing, and at the end there's a hard boss. It's the jealous bass. Yeah. He's jealous of the working instruments.
Yeah,
because he doesn't work.
Got a new bass, and he just like threw the old one up in the attic, and now the old one's mad. And he's accompanied by a gently weeping guitar and some drums.
A busted drum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gently weeping guitar.
Although outside of like the Jess's bass's room, there's like a room of two mice in it. I don't know what they're doing, and they speak with some sort of like dialect.
Oh,
or
god
weird
damn it,
accent.
Mao. God damn it, Mao. It's Cockney.
What, it is?
Yes, it's Cockney. They're Cockney mice.
Is that how Cockney people talk? I have no idea. I couldn't understand a single word they said.
Yeah, no, it's Cockney, and it's intentional that you can't understand what the fuck they're talking about, because that's how Cockney works.
Does Cockney even exist anymore?
Well, not really, but it was a popular form of rhyming slang in years gone by in Britain. And it was bizarre, and I don't understand it at all. But apparently in the original Japanese version, they were talking in some kind of extremely obscure and completely unintelligible Japanese dialect, and Cockney was the closest fit for it. Yeah. And yeah, I love it. I just, like, in the middle of a fucking dungeon, they're just there. It's great.
They give you stuff, too.
Yeah, they give you stuff. It's cool.
So, anyway, the base, the angry base, and its two friends, they have a jam that hits every single character, right?
Yeah.
Multiple times. So it's in your best interest to take out the guitar and the drum.
And this is, again, if you're facing three enemies, it's definitely worth using PSI Love. It's not worth it if you're just facing one, but three, definitely use it. Yeah.
And actually, I think I managed to blitz them out pretty fast because I spammed PSI Love and then had Boney use bombs or something.
Yeah. You can still get the sprinting bomb from behind the... Or is it the running bomb? I can't remember. You still get Wes's
Thunder
bombs.
Bomb.
He still hides them behind the old people's home. But
I want to get as many as possible for this.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. It's a hard boss fight, but it's completely pointless telling people now, but if... Like, when Javier was streaming the game, I told him, like, go grind on the Australopants.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
To the left of the ropeway, because they're way higher level than you, and they give you, like, 400 experience each, and you can beat them with two PSI loves, although their attacks will, like, give you mortal damage each time. There's a hot spring right nearby. So that's what I did. I, like, did, like, a little bit of grinding, and then everything in the attic was really easy, because you go up, like, a level every one or two battles.
The enemies outside the ropeway are pretty hard. There's a cattle snake enemy, and cattle snake enemies, the battle memory tells you, like, don't fight these guys, even though your creators are scared of them.
Yeah, a lot of the enemies you're facing at this point are chimeras made by the pig masks.
Yes.
Oh yeah, we haven't talked about chimeras, yeah. So there's the squawking... Well, yeah, but this is, like, the main chimera part of the game. And there's a squawking stick, which is a chimera of a bird and a stick, and it's the best one. There's the pig tuniers, who don't really attack you that much, and all they do is spawn more pig tuniers for the most part. And then
that'd be pretty useful for grinding on.
Yeah, they're fobbies, except they don't give as much experience as fobbies.
And then there's ein swine, I think, are in this part as well. What's the batangatan or something? There's a fusion.
Batangatan, yeah.
Batangatan, which is a fusion of bat and orangutan. The enemies in this game just are crazy creative, and it was a great idea to make them all like chimeras, I think, because there's so many like funny combinations of animals that are just like the Australophant. I love that the Australophant's like neck is the elephant's nose or elephant's trunk. And so there's like the ostrich head, and then it's just got a smiling, like grinning elephant head as well, with a pair of legs sticking out of it. It's the best.
So back to the attic. You beat the Jealous Base, a hard boss fight, and you get to Lucky / Duster's room.
I want to talk about the music at this point, because a reprise of the Earthbound Strange Enemy theme plays in Duster's room, which, because it's a mostly bass track, it kind of fits, but it makes you appreciate, like, just how crappy the GBA sound chip is, because the Earthbound version had all these cool, it was like a really nice sample, and it had all these cool effects, like, I think it had, like, reverb and stuff on it, and the GBA sound chip can't do that, and it also can't do high-quality samples, so it ends up sounding really crappy, and it, you know, it definitely made me appreciate how good the rest of the music is, that it doesn't sound too crappy.
So I believe you're talking to the entire band, and Duster, and Duster's like very confused because he's amnesia. He doesn't remember what happened 3 years ago. He didn't remember his name, and like DCMC found him, took him in, they told him how to play the bass, and they find that he's one of the greatest.
He became really fucking good in 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. he's one of the greatest bass players ever, in like their words. You even get like a little montage of him learning how to play the bass. It's quite funny, but touching. DCMC guys, they're not against Duster going away. Like they kind of believe that's important that he has to go away. They're like believers in fate and stuff.
They believe in fate, and they think that the best way to ask fate is to play rock, paper, scissors.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bizarre, but at this point I'm like, okay, yeah, fate, rock, paper, scissors, it's fine. Also, Shimmy Zmiz is the best NPC name.
It's pretty good. So you have to play rock, paper, scissors with every one of the band members. You can learn their weaknesses, I guess you could say, from talking to the other ones. Although when you get to the final one, he actually tells you what to throw, and if you throw it, you'll win. It's just kind of weird. I guess he completely believes you.
He wants Duster to fulfill his destiny.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they let him win. There's no way to lose. I can't remember what it is they do if you lose, but
they go like, I did late, or you did it late.
Let's if you pick the wrong one, they go, oh, I went too late, and then they just let you carry on and go to another guy or whatever.
So yeah,
the DCMC are cool dudes.
They are cool dudes.
I actually like the Runaway Five, but I like the DCMC more.
So you win Duster's
freedom.
His allegiance, but he
still doesn't know whether he's really Duster or not.
Yeah, but he vaguely remembers where he put the egg.
Yes. And again, it's another great scene when he leaves the DCMC, because there's a little montage that plays of him, learning to play bass and them taking him under their wing, and then he picks up his afro and takes it off his head, and puts it down.
That was a really heartbreaking moment for me. I wanted him to keep the afro on.
Yeah.
You also got the DCMC pamphlet, which is needed for later.
Very much needed.
So. After that, you get Kumatora back. She changes out of her girly clothes, as she called them, and back into her old stuff. Changes with her hair, and now you got your full party back.
Duster, yeah, and you go outside to see where the lightning has been coming from, which is this weird tower.
This is where the next chapter starts.
The Tower of Love and Peace.
The Tower of Love and Peace, yes. No, not the Tower of Thunder, the Tower of Love and Peace.
Yes, Tower of Love and Peace. Also,
Tower of Love and Peace.
Right. At this point, fuck PK Thunder. It always misses. The minute I got to Kumatora back, I was like, I'm going to do PK Thunder. No, it missed like 3 times in a row. I never used it again. Not even PK against Thunder, enemies that are weak to it. It's such a shitty attack.
It sucks in Earthbound too. It's terrible. Sucks.
It's so bad.
It was fine. Why even include it? I don't know what's wrong with you guys.
Yeah, I know, right? The reason I tried using it is because you said that it wasn't an awful attack and it just missed 3 times.
Oh, me? I didn't.
Someone told me it didn't suck. You were lying.
Yeah. So at this point in the game, after you get Duster, if you're willing to make the trek back to Osoi Castle, you can refight Mr. Passion, and I believe he has a new music.
He does, yes.
He has a new battle music. He's now Lord Passion. He's grown in rank.
Oh,
he's stronger, but if you beat him, you get some shoes for Duster that are extremely strong. And will last
is
you
it an
much
optional
the game.
Fight?
Yes.
I was kicking myself because it wasn't until I was like halfway up Thunder Tower that I was like, wait a minute, I should have fought Lord Passion. No!
Yeah, it gets you like shoes for Duster that like are the strongest item for him until the end of the game.
Yeah. But at this point, the chapter 5 is called The Tower of Thunder.
Well, I guess you could say we are kicking ourselves if you didn't know about
no.
it.
How? No.
Get it? No. It's Duster no. kicks! No. Ah!
Great. Nice one.
I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's okay. It was good. It was fine.
Actually, anyway, it was terrible.
It could have been worse.
Back to the chapter.
The reconstructed lion is a fucking annoying enemy. God damn it.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying.
Because there's a part... The next part is Duster looks for the egg and he can't find it, basically. And you're sort of looking around. You get to this area with loads of holes in the ground and there's a particular one you have to jump through. But if you jump through the wrong one, then you have to trek all the way back and you have to fight like 3 fucking reconstructed lions every time you do it.
No, dude, it's the Kanga Sharks.
The Kanga Sharks aren't fucking annoying enemies, though, because Unlike the reconstructed lion, okay, there's three like base. The enemies have other behaviors, but there's three basic ones. There's enemies that run away from you or do nothing. There's enemies that roam around, and there's enemies that as soon as they see you, they run towards you. And the reconstructed lion runs towards you as fast as possible every fucking time. Which means you always have
to fight
it.
Pretty sure the Kangasharks do that too.
No, they don't. Or if they do, they spawn in areas where you can easily run past them. But by like the 15th reconstructed lion, I was just, I'm going to look up what fucking hole it is on the internet. I don't care.
It's the one southwest.
Yeah, it is.
I just figured out which one it was by dropping down the wrong one once and then seeing where to go.
You can just, go to the far left and the area you drop down into and see the one that, like, light coming down from the hole you need to go into, and then you just use that to go back up.
Anyway, yeah, and we've made a point about the sign in the desert earlier on that's sort of justifying why there's a frog in the desert, and there's another sign here that justifies sort of it's like, hey, did you know that mole tunnels can really be like dungeons? Moles often use their tunnels to construct like intricate networks to confuse their prey.
Yeah.
Trap and confuse their prey. It's like, yeah, it totally justifies like the fact that the moles have like a dungeon kind of burrow.
They're like the dungeon man of real life.
Yeah. And it,
my life goal is to become the first mix of human and dungeon in it.
Best character. And then, but then it never bloody bothers to explain why they can talk and why they wear little hats and have shovels. So I don't.
They're Monty Mole. Actually, Monty Mole doesn't do that.
It's
dude.
Like you have to keep the disbelief, but you could. It's like it's very particular about the areas that it asks you to suspend your disbelief in. It's good. I like it.
Also around that area, you can find their special present box, which has fireworks in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty funny. But also, yeah, if you go back to the ropeway, you'll still get your ass kicked by cow snakes. Cow snakes
yes.
fucking...
I had to wait until ages later, and I deliberately went back to fight the cattle snakes, and I was like, yeah, fuck you, I'm such a high level now. Yes. I kind of like when games do that, when RPGs do that, when they have like a really hard enemy in a place and it kicks your ass, and then you go back to that place and kill the shit out of it. It's like in Doom 2, I think it is, where... like bosses or like ultra hard enemies are just like mook enemies in that game. It's good.
So you get through the tunnel and you find where Duster hid the egg, which is in a wrecked clayman.
He's covered in moss, but when you try to grab it from him, he immediately just fucks off and runs away.
He goes berserk and runs off.
And then he goes crazy and runs away. And you're like, shit, so I gotta spend the whole of this chapter chasing an egg now. Great.
So you follow him to, is it a warehouse that's being used to the pig mask army?
Yeah, they're building, that's where they store the clayman, I think.
Yeah, it's another clayman related place.
Oh, yeah.
On the way there, you see Thunder Tower, which is this huge electric type tower that has a big lightning cannon on top of it. And it's like, wonder what this is for.
I love how it respects your intelligence enough to never come out and tell you what it is.
Yeah, it's like it's totally obvious. It doesn't need to have like a dramatic fanfare and then go dup dup dup.
Yeah.
There's the source of the lightning. You know, like
also, they do that a lot in this game about like they don't just come out and say, this is what this was and like whatever. There's no really, like big reveals like that.
Also around the area, there's two things I quite like. I saw another dancing door thing, you know, the panels which have the dance moves on them. I don't know if you can come back and open that later.
We should mention that Salsa is missing.
Yeah,
so.
Salsa is not in your party. At the very start of the chat, there's like a highway above you can see because of perspective, and this knit hat guy. Bringing his car along.
Such a nice little detail.
And later you go on the highway and he's below it.
Yeah. Knit hat guy is a guy who you can give your items to him and he'll store them in his like car. And he's always giving you like trying to motivate you. He's a cool guy.
He's a cool he's the equivalent of Escargo Express from Earthbound. He holds on to your items and manages them, but
does anything else happen before you get to the pig mask facility?
You don't need to like go through everything that happens.
Okay,
like,
but you get there and some pretty hardcore foreshadowing starts. Because they mistake you for your
the pig master. Well, before that, pig masks are like they're having a conversation amongst themselves. Where it's like,
oh,
hey,
yes.
Guys, do you guys take your masks off when you go to the bathroom? Oh, it's God. Like, what? No, do you do that? Yeah, there's this hook that next to the bathroom that, you know, aren't you supposed to hang your mask on there? No, that's for hanging your jacket on. You take your mask off when you go to the bathroom, weirdo. And then they notice you.
Yeah, it's like, I love the, like, just the level of inaneness of the conversation is, it's funny. It's very funny.
The pig masks are just, like, generally normal dudes. Like, yeah. The first chapter really made me hate the pig masks.
Well, yeah, but, like, most of the first, yeah, that's the thing. The depiction of the pig masks is very nuanced, and I like it. And in the first chapter, of course, the pig masks aren't just regular dudes. They're dudes that have come with the pig mask army and invaded Tasmiley, but... And I guess they're like, you know, the original pig masks. But by 3 years have gone past, and I guess they must have got like lazy or they're full of idiots. Because post chapter 4, the pig masks are some of the best characters. And in fact, there's loads of fucking pig masks in the Clayman factory who have hilarious lines.
The pig mask leader or the blue pig mask, I don't know how high ranked they are, but they mistake Lucas for the like king of the Thunder Tower.
No, for their commander or something?
Yeah, for their commander.
That's commander. And they it's like, oh, these clothes won't do. Commander, here, take this jacket. And he gives you a commander's jacket and cool Duster and Kimotora. Duster, Kimotora, and Boney get put in, like, pig masks.
Yeah.
Duster and Kimotora just look like pig mask guys, while Duster has a special gold pig mask.
Boney.
Yeah.
Actually, also, they don't reuse the generic pig mask sprite, because Kumatora's pig mask sprite, I think, looks different to the regular ones. It's either shorter or thinner, or maybe both, and then...
She's a little skinnier.
Yeah, and then Duster, his... Because all the pig masks are fat, I think, supposedly. And Duster's pig mask outfit, when he still walks with his limp, which is just glorious. I love it.
It's probably loose on him. Pig mask rations are like pork chips and like all this really greasy food.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention as well, by this, when you dressed up Boney to look like a human, eventually at some point, because he's even outside of the club Tisabu, he's walking around in the clothes. It's like, hey, can I go back to being a dog, please?
Yeah, they forget that he's still a dog, and he, like, reminds them. Great. I'd forgotten that he was a dog as well. I wasn't questioning it at that point. He was just like, hey, can I be a dog? I was like, oh, yeah, he doesn't need to be a human anymore. But, yeah, I like, the clothes that he ends up wearing are just the, like, really generic, like, hey, I'm just an ordinary human type clothes. Like, there's always the hat, you know, the hat that makes you look identically human.
So you're given what is it, the pork bean, a pork bean to drive around?
They follow the clayman out of the factory and through a highway, and a pig mask rides up in a pork bean and it's like, whoa, hello, commander, if you're on the way somewhere, why don't you take my pork bean?
The claymen are designed to put themselves onto a garbage truck when they go haywire. So he jumps onto a garbage truck, which drives away to dump him off. So you've got to follow him on the pork bean.
Your first pork bean actually crashes because of fucking facade laying down.
It's a floating vehicle and it crashes because a banana peel has been left on the road. It's like video game logic to the ultimate.
So another pork bean shows up driven by the pork, what's his name?
The fierce pork trooper.
Yeah, all right. So and he smells you and knows that you're not their commander. So you fight him, and he has probably my favorite battle theme in the game so far, which is called Unfounded Revenge.
Yes, Unfounded Revenge is a great track, and it made it into Super Smash Bros., and the remix in there is very good as well. Like, in general, I think that the overworld music in Chapter 5 kind of dragged its feet, but the battle music is great.
Yeah. It's an alright fight. A special thing to do with it is because said pork trooper is a huge DCMC fan, you can like just sort of wave the pamphlet that you got earlier, Em, and be mesmerized for a few turns.
He gets
it's
jealous.
Quite vital.
Yeah.
And you can make it through the battle pretty easily if you know to do that.
With the pamphlet, he's pretty much a joke boss, but there's a lot of bosses in this game that I didn't know the special weakness that they had. I had no idea what their special weakness was, and I just fought them like regular, and they were really fucking challenging, let me tell you. So, yeah.
You can drive all over in the Pork Bean. I think, can you drive all the way back to, or fly?
No, yes. The way back to Tasmaili is closed. But okay. I will tell you this, you can go and drive back to the Pigmask, who waves you on after he lends you his Pork Bean. And he's still there, stuck in place with his arm raised. And if you look at him, it says he's passed out. And if you go back to that area at any part of the game in the future, which you can do, he's still there, stuck in the exact same position.
Oh my god. Does anyone know what the deal is with refueling the Pork Bean? Because I had to do it once and then never again.
Yeah, I also had to do it once. I didn't run out of juice though ever. I just went straight, took it to the refueling station.
Yeah.
Also, I've heard if you leave it refueling for too long, it can explode, but
yes,
it didn't happen to me.
Well, what happens is it'll charge and then it'll beep, and the sign says as soon as it beeps, then you press the A button to stop fueling it. Because I blew it up at one
point.
If you
blow up your Pork Bean, you have to walk through that whole area, and
yeah,
it's actually full of quite difficult enemies.
Yes, I know. Well, fortunately, I saved the game at the frog, so I reset.
Because of
that noise.
There's a recharge station for its robot, and the robot's like, hey, guy, I'm out of energy. I had just enough energy to get to the recharging station, but not to press the button to recharge myself. Can you be a pal and just, like, charge me up? And you have to get the charging thing as close to 15 seconds long as possible. I did.
If you go too far, he explodes. If you go too low, if you get it just right, he'll give you 100 DP.
He gives you 200.
Which isn't that much.
No,
it's not that much, no.
It's just a silly thing. It's not actually like... Yeah. You can make money by doing this.
So at the same area where the robot is the worst cafe ever.
Yeah, there's lots of places you can stop off along the way. And the best one is the dirty cafe. And it's amazing. It's an amazing location. It's a very earthboundy bit of humor, I think. Just like a really dirty cafe. And it plays... the music that plays in it is a really off-key remix of Alex Log Cabin.
If you try to run in the cafe, then the waitress gets mad at you because you're gonna kick up, you're gonna disturb the mold.
The funniest thing is in the cafe is that you can talk to one of the pig masks and he's like, look, I know you're not the real masked man, you're an impersonator, but I don't really want to tell anybody because I'm too lazy. They don't give a shit. It's brilliant.
Real high morale they have in the Pigmask army.
Yeah.
So there's a side quest you can do here where there's a mouse who wants you to find her 7 children. And she gives you a useful item for the next boss fight if you find all 7 of them. And
it's totally worth it, by the way, that item.
Yeah, they're in pretty obvious places too.
Yeah, it's a really useful item for just the rest of the game, and it gives Boney a use because you just give it to him and have him have it perfectly. And additionally, if you don't look for the mice, you'll never find Leo.
Who's Leo? Oh, is he the guy with all the presents?
Yeah, he says that all of the girls of the land are infatuated with him and send him presents all the time. And I didn't know this when I played the game. I just like, oh, okay, and I left. But if you bug him, like, if you talk to him like 5 times, he eventually comes around to the idea of giving you a present. And regardless of which one you open, I know because I save stated, it always gives you a knit sweater, which is actually an alright item for a while.
Oh, damn, I can't.
Because it restores your HP. But again, he's another character in this area that you can go back and revisit later in the game, at which point he's opened all of the presents and he goes, oh yeah, all of the other items that I got were really awesome. You got the swear, which is crap.
So he's done like 10 different sweaters at this
point. You finally get to where they're dumping off the junked clayman. And when you go down there, you fight another clayman that's covered in junk.
and has gone haywire.
This is kind of a tricky boss. Yeah, it was much trickier for me than the jealous base, but that's just because I don't know, I suck.
If you try to smell his weakness of Boney, or say the smell was too powerful for Boney to smell because he's garbage.
But at this point, I think you've learned PSI Shield, and PSI Shield is the most fucking overpowered thing in the game if you've got it by that point, and you can just... pretty much every boss you can just cast shield on all your party and win it very easily.
I think I kind of like forgot about it after this boss fight. I just used offense down on bosses.
I don't bother using offense down when I can use the scary mask courtesy Duster, because Duster's is like paralyzing thief tools at like the wall staples and the pendulum don't tend to work on bosses.
I've noticed there's a lot more enemies, especially bosses, that are resistant to the pendulum at this point.
Yeah, yeah. Well, otherwise the pendulum would be totally OP, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, mostly because it lets you hear the rhythm that you need to use. Yeah.
But most enemies are at least susceptible to one of Duster's abilities, and like the Siren Beetle, I think, is tragically underused by people because it never like gives you like a tutorial on it. Like, it slowly introduces the Hypno Pendulum and the Wall Staples as like things in the game, but it never bothers telling you about the Siren Beetle, and it's a really cool item because there's so many enemies when it's literally just guaranteed to work. Like, it works 100% of the time, and you can never get hit if you don't want to, as long as you spam it every turn.
Yeah, and this is where the shield... what is it? The shield remover?
Yeah, the shield snatcher, because the boss catches a shield on himself.
And so which boss?
The Forlorn Junk Heap.
Oh, yeah, yes.
So for people who have for some reason decided to listen to this without playing the game, shields cut damage in half.
Yeah.
And then you can eventually break it by hitting it enough, but it's much easier to just remove it entirely. With the shield snatcher.
Again, I didn't have it the first time I played this game, and it made the boss very difficult. I think you're definitely supposed to have the shield snatcher at this point.
I still don't have it, and probably won't bother going back and getting it.
Really? Huh.
Whatever.
Its other annoying thing is that it puts junk on itself, which can heal it, raise its defense, or raise its offense. It's kind of annoying.
But then you can just debuff it again with Duster, which is what
I
did.
That's true.
And that, like, it wastes one of his turns, but I get three turns and the boss gets one, so it worked out in my favor, to be honest. Yeah.
So yeah, after you've beaten the Forlorn Junk Heap, you get the Hummingbird Egg, which is referred to now as the Egg of Light. Don't know the significance of it yet. But...
yeah.
The interesting thing is that when Duster touches the egg, he remembers who he is.
Yes. He remembers being Duster. Yeah. He goes back to being Duster. After you get the egg, I believe you get driven straight to the tower by another pig mask.
By a pig mask who's... yeah, he comes and he drives you there, and he's awesome at driving.
he pulls off some sick pork bean drifts. Pretty good.
Yeah, that guy... he shouldn't be just a grunt. He should be like a commander with those riding skills.
He's awesome. But
a funny thing that happens before you go on the ride with him is like he says, "I'm sorry, but there's going to be no restroom breaks." And you just hear Boney sort of whine.
Yeah, Boney whines. there's sort of a problem in Thunder Tower. You go there as the commander. And again, I really love talking to all the pig masks. One of them says, "Hey, you look suspicious. You're here to destroy Thunder Tower," is what I'd say if any suspicious people arrived. As you can see, security here is airtight.
And that's great.
Well, another one says, "No problem here," which is, by the way, the text that it says if you look at nothing, it just goes, "No problem here." And he says, "No problem here," is what I'd like to say. And then he moans about the generator.
That's good.
This area has the best enemy in the game, or the funniest enemy. It's the whatever.
The whatever is an amazing enemy. It's like the chimera that's just like, what are we going to put in this chimera? Whatever.
So what they created it first, then they saw how shitty it was, so they named it to whatever.
Yeah. So what is it? Tower... is that, it's like part guinea pig and part
Oh, yeah.
like
part human brain.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And the best thing about them is that you don't have to fight any of them. And if you just walk up to them, they go, "Wow!" And there's a little love heart that appears in a speech bubble. Like, I felt bad fighting them because sometimes they're in the way and I had to kill them. They're adorable.
They're so stupid that they don't even understand that they're supposed to be enemies.
Yeah, but at the same time, if you actually fight them, they have some quite powerful PSI techniques that you have to be careful of.
There's some dangerous enemies here. The robots are quite
annoying.
The little Katamari guys.
Battery men. Yeah. Oh, such a cool enemy. Man.
They have a really good synergy with the minor robots.
Yeah.
Because if you're fighting a minor robot and there's battery men and the minor robot is low on health, he can take a battery man and put it inside himself and restore his health.
Yeah.
So you want to take out the battery man first.
Again, I think that's an interesting little thing that people complain about this game's battle system being too simple, but I can't think of many RPGs that do that. They have battery enemies that can attack you and can also restore the batteries of other enemies that you're fighting. It's just one of these really simple, weird, offbeat ideas that make this game so enjoyable.
Yeah. Oh, so the minor robots, I believe they're called the minor robots, it says in that memory, because they're only a minor in maths. It's pretty.
Huh?
That memory is just great.
So much. Yeah.
So the tower gets its energy from these electric catfish.
Yes. Yeah.
That they have in tanks. They scare them to make them give off an electric shock. But the catfish aren't getting as scared anymore, so the tower doesn't have as much energy.
They don't really care anymore. Also, I think there's more references to Lucas looking like the commander, of course, because they think he is the commander. So at this point, you should probably be wondering who the commander is. I've got a pretty good idea of who it is, but of course,
someone spoiled it for me. Fuck that guy who spoiled it for me.
To be fair, it's at least somewhat obvious, and I didn't clock it at all, and afterwards it was revealed, I was like, wow, I'm a fucking idiot.
So yeah, dear listener, hopefully you realize who it probably is. I don't know who it is. Maybe it isn't the thing person I think it is, but probably
it might not
is.
Be the thing that you think at all. Might be totally different.
Facet chases you up Thunder Tower.
Well, you fight the Pork Warrior or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Pork Warrior. Again.
Pork Warrior. Fierce Pork Trooper, but I like that name better.
Yeah.
Pork Warrior.
Yeah, it's like a blue suit of armor. He's got a lot of DCMC memorabilia.
He's still a joke boss. I love all of his memorabilia, like his fucking poster that hasn't been officially released yet and stuff. It's great.
I was just happy that I got to hear Unfounded Revenge again.
Yeah, it's still an awesome track. Although the what's the other one? Smashing Songs of Praise, that plays as well in this chapter, and that's another awesome boss theme.
So you beat the Pork Trooper's ass again, and now you get chased by fucking Facade.
Facade is the only person who knows that you're not their commander.
Yeah, so I love how when he chases you off screen before it switches to the next screen, it always stops on Facade so he can eat a banana and throw the peel aside.
He eats many fucking bananas. This will be important later.
Yes, his bananas will one day be his undoing.
Up in you go up the tower and you go into this weird room where you can fight a kind of obnoxious optional boss called Miss Marshmallow.
Who is a robot maid who just looks like a robot at first. But if you fight her for long enough, do enough damage, she goes into killer mode or something and sprouts drill arms and stuff. Yeah. It's pretty weird. It's
ticked
pretty
off
creepy.
Mode. But yeah, well, she's a robot maid who
for Mr. P, isn't it?
Yeah. Master P.
Who does everything for him.
Yeah. But Master P. I think we should probably talk about the room.
Some things you can see in this room: jukebox from Earthbound, guitar from Earthbound, teddy bear from
Earthbound. References. Yeah.
The robots that you become in the end of Earthbound. There's probably other things, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a load of Earthbound references.
There's the yo-yo. When Miss Marshmallow attacks you.
It's an interesting collectible because it's called Friends Yo-Yo. And, it's called Friends Yo-Yo.
We'll get to that later, I guess.
Yeah, we'll get to that later. It is. It's worth fighting Little Miss Marshmallow for it, definitely.
Yeah, She's kind of tough, though.
Also, she is kind of tough. Who else do I know that had a robot maid?
I don't know.
Anyway, but the room's very weird. It's unlike anything you would have seen before. And
Catsman, Electra was a robot.
Huh? What?
Electra. In Foresight. Trout-flavored yogurt.
Oh, trout-flavored yogurt. Shit, I totally forgot about all that.
Earthbound.
Earthbound. More Earthbound. That's the room, basically.
So you get to the top of... Actually, no, there's another boss after.
Mr. Janitor.
Yeah,
not janitor.
He's halfway between a generator and a janitor, I think.
Yeah. Also,
Lucas gets struck by lightning.
Yeah, he gets struck by lightning.
Shit, that's how he learns Flash.
He gets struck by lightning and they're like, are you okay? And he's fine.
Yeah, he's fine. He's fine.
It's a new move.
And Flash, what it does is it like makes people cry.
Flash is a stupid ability.
It gives them status damage. Yeah. I don't think I really used that.
So, you fight Mr. Generator at the top of the tower.
Mr. Janitor.
Janitor.
This tower is really fucking heavy. This chapter, rather, is really fucking heavy on bosses. Like, in 4, there's one boss. In this one, there's 4 bosses. There's so
5
many bosses.
If you fight Ms. Marshmallow.
Yeah. And Mr. Janitor is...
quite hard.
If you don't stop at the vending machine in King P's room and buy the rubber cape... insanely difficult. If you stop and buy the rubber cape, then he's really fucking easy.
I didn't
know you had to buy the rubber cape until Dodds told me. God damn it.
Yeah, the rubber cape turns like 130 lightning damage into 13 lightning damage.
Yeah.
I'm so almost stupid.
I struggled on Mr. Janitor for ages my first playthrough and had to grind a bunch on the enemies below him. But in the if you have the rubber cape, he's literally a massive pushover.
I only had Lucas survive after him.
Yeah,
I was a bit sad.
So we finally reached the top sphere of Thunder Tower, and Facade follows you up here and is like, okay, you pathetic fools, I'll blow up Thunder Tower to get rid of you or something.
Yeah,
like he calls down an airstrike on the top of the tower to get rid of you. And the ship comes down. Facade goes to get on the ship and he slips on a banana peel that's laid out
and falls off. He
falls off the Thunder Tower and dies.
Yeah, get fucking wrecked, Facade. It only makes me sad we couldn't fight him. But
so,
Yeah,
and so the ship, seeing this, they take off.
You jump on and grab it before it goes.
Duster grabs it with the rope snake.
Which he would have forgotten about. But he still has it. And uses the rope snake. And the rope snake has, like, because he can talk. You're going along with the plane, and the rope snake's like, right, Duster. At this point, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is I am now a major character in the story because of these events. The bad news is my jaw can't hold on. It's so crazy.
Every time a character in Mother 3 says, I have good news and bad news.
Yeah,
that means it's only bad news.
Yeah, the rope snake is such a douche, seriously.
Fucking rope snake.
So, at this point, you see the masked man for the first time.
Yeah, the real commander, and, you know, you catch a glimpse of him before the rope snake. The rope snake lets go, and everyone falls down.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's the end of the
chapter. Chapter 6 starts.
Chapter 6 is called Sunflower Fields. It's the shortest chapter in the game at like maybe 5 minutes at most.
Yeah.
It's probably has one of the most iconic scenes in the game in it.
The Sunflower Fields.
Yeah.
So you drop off and you're in a field of sunflowers. Nothing but sunflowers.
Just Lucas alone. Well, it's on a cliffside.
Yeah.
To some people, Chapter 6 was really emotionally effective, but to be honest, I wasn't really a fan of it. I think of all the, like, emotionally charged scenes in the game, this one was the one that kind of left me flat. I didn't like it.
Maybe...
It was kind of, like, the whole, like Hinoa appeared to the Tasmanians in a dream and told them to put a haystack for Lucas to land in, that whole thing just feels kind of contrived, I guess. I wasn't a fan. Although I guess it does remind you of Lucas's family situation, and by this point the start of Chapter 4 was a long time ago, and I guess some people had kind of forgotten how troubling it all is, and it's good to have it there. Yeah.
I think I've just become hardened emotionally, and games cannot make me sad anymore.
Oh, you say that now, Mao. You say that now.
Okay, we'll see about that.
This game's fucking depressing.
No crying until the end.
I gotta say, that's a pretty lame tagline. This game's awesome, but the tagline's stupid.
That's not the tagline.
Yes,
the tagline is strange, funny, heartrending.
It was used in commercials, Japanese commercials for the game.
No, is it strange, funny, heartrending for Earthbound?
No. Nope. Mother 3 is strange.
This game stinks.
Yeah.
No, in Japan for Earthbound or Mother 2.
All right, what Lucas is seeing in the sunflower fields, sunflowers being Kinawa's favorite flower, is the ghostly image of his of Kinawa. Like leading him to the left side, you find Boney. Boney's okay. You don't find Duster or Kumatora, and you get to the very edge of the cliff side, and there's Hinoa just sort of floating off the side of it. And Lucas and Boney jump after her, and you land in a giant haystack in Tasmany Village.
That was put there by Wes and Alec.
Yes, and thus begins Chapter 7, The Seven Needles.
Chapter 7 is the longest chapter in the game by far, so that and Chapter 8 is going to be just one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chapter 6.
Just have... Four, thank Sorry. You. So sorry. Let's talk about... Don't stop interrupting me, even if it's to say sorry for interrupting me. It's totally pointless if you interrupt me by apologizing for interrupting... Anyway, right, the point is, do you have any general comments about... chapters 4 through 6 before we finish, because I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
So it was at this point in the game that I noticed, by the way, I'm going to spoil a twist that isn't in the game and that was cut from the game.
What?
I'm going to spoil a twist that was cut from the game. That was how the story was originally going to pan out, but it was changed at the last minute.
I'm actually going to deaf myself because... I'll get
Are you serious? It's
now,
not in the game. It's not in the game.
Not in the game now.
No, but what I mean is, if I know something that won't happen, I know it's not going to happen.
Oh my god! Just deafen yourself.
Okay, deafen yourself. Fine. So it's kind of weird that I never noticed it before because I always notice these things normally. But in Kumatora's profile picture on the item screen, it shows her in her original outfit. Like, she's not wearing, like, the blue dress or whatever it is. She's wearing, like, something with black straps, like the Magypsy outfits. It's kind of weird that they forgot to change that now that I think about it, because if you've played Mother 3 and you don't know, the original reveal was going to be that Kumatora was going to turn out to be the final Magypsy, Ionia, and she was going to sort of, she was going to turn out to be...
Lucria is the final Magypsy. Ionia is the one that teaches you Peaky Love.
Yeah. She was going to turn out to be Locria and die at the end of the story or whatever, and it's going to be really emotional, but Itoi changed it because, I don't know, maybe it was too, like, maybe the end of the game just got too convoluted with too many things going on, and he wanted to make it a bit simpler and sort of focus it down, but, like, to me, like, that kind of explained a lot because... Like, all of the other characters have, like, very, like, defined character arcs, but I always thought Kumatora was just kind of there, and she never... She was always, like, kind of irrelevant to the story. Like,
does Boney have a character arc?
Well, not really, but he does things. Like, Kumatora barely even does anything. It made a lot of sense to me, because there's also cut dialogue in the game, which talks about... in which I think Duster and Kumatora are talking about, like, their parents... maybe Kumatora asked Duster about his parents, and then he asked her about her parents, and she says she doesn't have any or whatever. But yeah, it kind of made sense to me that they took it out, and it kind of made sense to it why she seems like such a third wheel in the story now. And I also think that changing the twist was probably the better thing for them to do. Because I think her being the final Magypsy would have been crap, to be honest.
We still don't know who the final Magypsy is.
It's a way better twist than what got cut. So fucking good.
Okay, don't tell me.
I won't. No.
I was gonna do that. After telling you what a great a twist.
Happy, I know you're fairly gung ho about spoilers.
from no, what I've not. Seen. Yeah, you are.
Just spoilers about games I don't give a fuck about, like whatever that was on the Gentleman Discussing Video episode that people got mad about.
I don't remember.
No, there was
that
something
was.
You spoiled it, and then you were like, oh, well, it's 10 years old. It doesn't matter. I think it was Okami, maybe?
No, because I haven't finished Okami.
You haven't finished Okami? Oh,
no.
Deary me. The end of that game's great. Anyway, yeah, I think the rule is if it's like 10 or 15 years old, you should be free to spoil it as long as you say spoiler alert first. Just say a little like, spoiler alert, you know, Snape kills Dumbledore, and then you're done. Whatever. So yeah, can we tell Mao to unmute himself?
All right, Mao. So here's never mind. It's not
Mao. If he doesn't unmute himself, I'll just kick him, and he won't get to sign off. That'll be the way it is.
I think he's doing something else. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, that's the end. Yep. And I should say at this point, I should have said at the start. Maybe Happy Man or me, whenever we edit this, can put this to the start. But just to make sure. If you're listening to this, we're recording this before the first episode has gone live, so we haven't been able to answer your questions and comments. So at the end, I'll set aside some time where if anyone said anything that I think we should address or something that they want us to talk about in the comments, then we'll talk about it at the end of the third episode. I think that's a good thing to do.
All right. Since I was deafened...
Yeah.
One thing I like to say, you just said like about chapter 7, 8, they're the longest part of the game. That kind of surprises me. I thought this is going to be like the longest part of the game with the most stuff in it, like chapter 4 and 5. But
no, not quite a long shot.
Like, I think if it went on any longer, the second act would drag on. To be honest, I think it's about the right length.
Yeah. So I'm anticipating the patiently would be the right word. What's going to happen next, and if it's going to rend my heart and pull my heartstrings and stuff. Hope it's good.
It's very, very memorable, yeah. Chapter 7, I would say my favorite chapters in the game are probably 1, 7, and 8. That's not to say that the middle of the game isn't really good, because it is really good. Like, I'd forgotten how many funny lines there are, and I'd forgotten especially how cool, like, the pig mask related bits of these chapters were. They were great. I love them.
You might not like these podcasts because we're just going over stuff you may or know or not, but there's just so much stuff we could talk about and funny lines. Like, the board alone has so much such.
Yeah.
Like, so much shit. It's great.
I'm making an effort to add in, like, either interesting things or, like...
Yeah. Stuff like might miss, like Lord Passion, which I missed.
I don't just want to, like, describe the game. I want to describe why it's so good, and it really is very good.
It's good. I like it. I still think... the combat system's alright, I guess. It's just... I guess I can't fully appreciate it because the music thing doesn't really work on emulators very
I've gotten
well.
Quite proficient at it, but I think that I've gotten to the point where I'm deliberately pressing it slightly before I have to compensate for the small amount of lag.
You definitely have to compensate for the timing being off.
Most of the time I just power through enemies.
It was better than when I tried to emulate it on my Wii, because the Wii GBA emulation is shit on that for some reason, even though it can do mostly everything else just fine.
Alright. Is that it?
I guess? It's it, because I gotta go prepare for GWA.
Alright, bye. Hope you enjoyed the thingy.
Goodbye.
Me too. Yes. Leave us your questions and comments for the third episode.
Thanks for listening.
You know, if we do get these episodes out before the third one.
And please, play the game instead of listening to us talk about the game. If you haven't played the game, because the game's good, don't ruin it for yourself.
If you haven't played the game,
please.
There's still plenty of time to play all the way up until now, or download a save, because especially the last two chapters are the best.
So, bye. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.